When I met Jesus, I thought I knew exactly what I needed from him. But he showed me so much more. I am an advisor for the king, Herod Antipas. A royal official, if you will. And, if I may be blunt, money has never been a concern for me. I say that so you know that when my son became ill, it was not brought on by poverty or restrictions of any kind. My son, Amon, was 4 years old at the time. He was perfectly well one day, and the next, he couldn't get out of bed, which was unusual for a boy of his age, and especially for him. Ever since he could walk, he had always been very active. It concerned me greatly, and I brought in the best physician I knew, King Herod's personal physician. He said the fever would pass within days. It didn't. Instead, he became drastically sicker. Within a week, the child I knew was gone. The fever had robbed him of his life, even while he still breathed. Hamon's mother, my wife, died in childbirth, and he was all I had. I would do anything to save my child. And so I tried. I sent servants to Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Cana, everywhere I could think of, to find and bring physicians to treat my son. I even searched out a Roman physician to see if he knew something that the Jewish men did not know. I just wanted a different diagnosis. But I will never forget his words. "Sir, your son is going to die. Tell him what you need to say now, before it's too late. Unless you are a parent, you cannot know what those words do inside of you. What they do to your very soul. The Roman's conclusion and the confidence with which he said it sparked a desperation in me that I had never felt before. But there's only so much a man, even a rich man, can do. And I had exhausted my resources. I stayed with my son that week, and I watched him deteriorate. He stopped eating, and by that seventh day, he couldn't even open his eyes. I remember sitting at his bed, holding his small, frail hand, and his skin was so hot to the touch. It was as though it was on fire. One of my servant girls had gone to the well that morning and rushed into Amon's room, excitedly telling me that Jesus had returned to Galilee. Honestly, I knew many men by that name, so her news did not excite me, especially in light of my son's condition, but she was insistent that I listen to her and, oddly enough, go to him.
Don't you remember at Passover, when we went to the temple and it had been destroyed? Do you remember hearing about what had happened? A man came in, Jesus from Nazareth, and he torn it apart and claimed that the temple shouldn't be used for what the Pharisees were using it for. You remember this, don't you? So many people were talking about him, saying that he had healed the sick and he called himself the Son of God. He hasn't been around here for many months, but he's finally back and you should go to him. He might be the only one who can save Amon.
As she spoke, I began to remember the event. The outskirts of the temple had become commonly used for selling animals for sacrifice and for currency exchange, both of which were highly overcharged and had always made me furious to see, not because I couldn't afford their prices, but because I knew that most others could not. yet they still had to find a way, or else they would not be able to do as the law commanded for the feast. When we'd come that day, myself, my son, and my servants, we were met with a scene of chaos. Apparently, a young man had come into the temple court and began tearing it apart with his bare hands. He'd made quite the scene and left an impression on all who saw it. And as my servant so vividly recalled, dozens of people in the temple that day were also talking about how the man had gone on to heal people, drive out demons, and teach about God in ways that no one had heard before. But all I cared about, as I sat by my dying son, was that he had the power to heal. It didn't matter to me what else he was capable of or who he claimed to be. He could have claimed to be anything, and I wouldn't have cared if he was able and willing to bring my son back from the edge of death. My servant heard from other women at the well that the man had arrived in Cana, a town about 25 miles from my home in Capernaum. Without considering it a moment longer, I commanded 3 horses be readied, one for me, another for my manservant, and one for this Jesus. I had never prepared myself or rushed my servants as quickly as I did that day. The desperation inside of me drove me to also ride my horse harder than ever before. And still, the distance between Capernaum and Cana seemed never-ending as we rode. I thought about 1,000 things as I went. What would I say to Jesus? How could I convince him to come if he was unwilling or busy? Why did he possess this power? Where would I bury my son if he refused? By the time we finally arrived in Cana, I had come to one conclusion. I would believe anything this Jesus had to say if he would just heal my boy. But only if he did. My servant asked everyone we met on the road as we entered the small city where Jesus, who was famed for his actions in Jerusalem, was staying. Many knew that he had come and seemed proud to have him in their town, but only one knew exactly where he was staying. I used my rather filthy tunic to wipe the sweat and dirt from my face as we went. I was eager to make as good of an impression as I possibly could to the man who all but held my son's life in his hands, whether he knew it or not. At last, the man stopped and pointed ahead in the direction of a group of men coming from a street. I did not offer my thanks and instead jumped from my horse and walked toward the group. From behind me, I heard my servant ask our guide which one was Jesus. "Oh, you'll know," he replied. Honestly, at that moment, I deemed the old man to be completely useless. But he was exactly right. As I approached, some of the men of a dozen or so took notice of me, and I could sense their caution. They were as wary of a stranger rushing towards them as I was of them, but I didn't care who they all were. I just wanted Jesus.
Jesus of Nazareth?
In my mind, all that I could see was Amon lying in his bed, his body still and cold.
"Where is Jesus?"
The men parted and one stepped forward. He was my age, maybe a bit younger, and immediately I understood what the old man had meant. There was something about the one who I assumed was Jesus. Something in his eyes. An interest, a compassion, an unwarranted concern for a stranger.
"I am he. Why have you come, friend?"
Jesus' kindness caught me off guard. I suppose since hearing of this young man's actions in the temple, how he had heaved tables and thrown men out, I'd come up with a very different image of him. I'd imagined someone who would command fear and apprehension, but instead, all I saw in his eyes was friendliness and concern. Before I spoke, I looked behind me to make sure my servant and our third horse was visible to him, and I noticed a crowd of interested bystanders begin to form around us. I admit to being angry at them for their curiosity. My son's illness should not have been a cause for entertainment. Teacher, my son is sick and is near death. He will not live another day. Please, you need to come with me to Capernaum and heal my child. You see, I've brought a horse for you, and you can come and heal him. Please. It certainly surprised me when, instead of instantly agreeing, Jesus said nothing. He did nothing. And in place of the compassion I had seen before, he now seemed profoundly disappointed. As I waited for him to speak, I wanted to scream. I wanted to beg him at the top of my lungs to just get on the horse, put his hands on my son, and bring him back to me. But he didn't seem interested in that at all. Actually, he seemed more interested in the crowd.
Unless you people see miracles and signs, you won't believe in me, will you?
He may as well have struck me. From what I could understand, he was refusing. He would not heal my son, my Amon, because I had asked for a miracle. I know I was wrong, but I believed him to be selfish and utterly unkind. In that moment, I hated the man who had the power to save my son and apparently would not. I remember feeling horribly dizzy. Whether it was from the exertion of the ride or the shock of his response, I don't know. And I knelt down. To my surprise, Jesus walked next to me and sat with me. I looked at him through my tears and saw tears in his eyes too. He seemed to care deeply, so why would he not come, I wondered. I tried one more time to appeal to him. Please, sir, come before my boy dies. I could not have guessed what Jesus would do. I held my breath, and it felt as though everyone around did the same as I waited for Jesus' answer.
Go.
I could hardly believe it. Would he really send me home to watch my son die?
Your boy will live.
I sat in the dirt, stunned. I had asked and absolutely expected Jesus to undertake the 4-hour journey with me so he could heal my son, but he wouldn't. Instead, he said 4 words that were supposed to suffice. A bare promise that I could not verify until I arrived home. I would have to believe him. Suddenly, I realized what he meant by what he'd said, and why it seemed to be such a disappointment to him. If Jesus was who he claimed to be, the Son of Yahweh, the Messiah, then my faith should have been on him to begin with, without depending on if he healed Amon or not. I should not have asked him to come to my home, but rather to simply speak the word, if he was willing to heal my son. If he was the Son of God, the Christ that my people had waited so long for, then that would have been enough. But my faith was in what I thought Jesus could do for me. Had he come and healed Amon, I would have probably given him a gift of gold. But that was not what Jesus wanted from me. He wanted my focus and belief to be on him, and rightly so if he was the Christ. The people around us, who didn't seem to understand what he had said to them in the least, were apparently unsatisfied with what they'd overheard, probably because none of them would go to Capernaum to verify if Jesus really healed my son. Mumbling turned into shouting.
You can heal someone in Cana. Can you heal someone in Jerusalem?
Jesus, turn the water into wine, like you did at the feast.
I have a jar.
Here, please.
My daughter is sick. Heal her.
They came around him like vultures over their kill, calling over each other, each asking for their own miracles and signs. My servant called for me.
Sir, come with me.
And I felt him pulling me out of the way as more and more people came to join in the commotion. I had no idea where they all came from, but they surrounded him until I couldn't even see Jesus anymore. The men he was with when I first saw him tried to push the people away and give him room, but the crowd was insistent. They wanted exactly what he had warned them against. It was a strange sight, and it bothered me. A man who claimed to be the long-awaited Messiah stood before them, and they asked him for magician's tricks. I considered how I must have looked to Jesus when I'd arrived. Not much different from those people, I supposed. I didn't know him at all, and he didn't know me, and yet I came to him, expecting him to come with me, 25 miles away, and heal someone who meant nothing to him. But instead of just doing as I asked, he forced me to see my mistake. Jesus didn't heal Amon from such a distance because he was trying to show how powerful he was. No, the miracle showed me that Jesus was far greater than I thought he was. Although I wouldn't know that for sure until I went home. But to my own surprise, I didn't feel a desperate need to return to Amon. Instead, I felt peace within me. Even without seeing my son, somehow beyond any doubt, I knew that he was healed.
Come. Let's go.
No. We need not hurry.
Sir?
You heard what Jesus said. Amon will live.
But how? How can you be sure without seeing him?
I don't know. But I believe him. I knew that it didn't make sense to him, and he wouldn't believe until he saw Amon for himself, but I couldn't explain the assurance that I felt, and my priorities changed completely. Instead of needing to hurry back home, all that I wanted was to spend more time with Jesus and learn from him. I understood now why people in Jerusalem couldn't stop talking about him. He had an effect that I had never known another person to have. Find a place to keep the horses for the night. We're staying here.
Sir, I don't... Yes, sir.
I'm sure the team must have thought I'd lost my mind, especially considering the fact that it was early in the afternoon and I wanted to stay the night. But I didn't know if I would ever have another chance to be with Jesus and speak to him. If he kept doing things like what he'd done in Jerusalem, I imagined that the Jewish leaders would want to put a stop to him and fast. So my servant, rather begrudgingly, asked the same old man who had guided us to Jesus and stayed around to see what would happen, where our animals and the two of us could stay for the night. But I didn't listen for an answer. My focus was on the crowd. Herod Antipas would have never allowed such a scene, or for people to be so close to him. He would have immediately called for guards to strike down anyone who attempted to touch him without his permission. And yet, even while Jesus was nearly crushed by the people, I heard no protests from him. After several minutes, people seemed to grow weary and perhaps frustrated that Jesus didn't produce fire or rain at their beckoning, and they began to leave. I heard one woman say that Jesus was a fraud and nothing more than a useless carpenter. Another agreed and recommended that he return to the Samaritans. I learned later that Jesus had been in Samaria for 2 days before he returned to Galilee, which was surprising since Jews rarely, if ever, spoke with, much less stayed with, Samaritans. And the people there had believed in him without any miracles to prove himself or back up his claims. It was understandable, then, that he was frustrated when, upon his arrival to his own country, he was immediately inundated with demands for miracles, by myself included. Jesus' friends pushed the remaining people away, calling after those who insulted their teacher until Jesus quieted them. I so clearly remember when Jesus saw me again.
You are still here.
What is the rush? His laughter seemed to echo through the emptying courtyard as he came to me and pulled me into an embrace.
Come, eat with us, you and your manservant.
Those next hours spent with Jesus were filled with laughter and confusion. He spoke of things I didn't understand, and it seemed that with everything he said, I had more and more questions to ask. But even while I sat in complete confusion at how he spoke of God and heaven, of the covenant between God and his people, I realized that no one could ever have known what he knew, especially at such a young age, if he was not God's chosen one, the long-awaited king that God had promised so long ago. We stayed in Cana that night, in the place that Jesus and his disciples stayed, and rose early the next morning to go home to Capernaum. It was strange saying farewell to Jesus. I had still not seen with my own eyes that my son was well, but I knew that he was. So I thanked Jesus all the same, and then my servant and I started off, us and our third, still unridden horse. By the fourth hour, as we came closer to Capernaum, I remember my excitement to see Amon growing until I felt I could wait no longer. When I'd left him the day before, he'd been so frail and weak. I was hopeful that the boy I would see now would be unrecognizable compared. We were within minutes when I saw people coming up the road, waving and jumping to get our attention. I recognized my servant girl who had recommended that I go to Jesus. And for a moment, when I saw her, I felt fear once again. What if I had been wrong about Jesus? What if he had not healed Amon, and he had died while I was away? What if...
Sir! You will never believe it, sir. Your son is well. He's alive.
Praise Yahweh! When? When did he become well?
Yesterday, around 1 in the afternoon. About 4 hours after you departed, the fever left him and he sat up and asked for you.
There are some things that I will never forget as long as I live. The words from the Roman physician. Jesus' answer to my request, talking with him, and the relief and utter joy I felt when I saw my Amon again. I had no patience left for riding, so I leapt from my horse and ran the rest of the way. Amon was outside playing, as he always was, when I arrived. There was no sign of the fever left on him. He looked as healthy as before, if not even more so. He had no weakness or struggle. He was completely well. It was as though his illness had been a bad dream and I'd finally awoken. But it was not a dream. Jesus had healed Amon from over 25 miles away. It occurred to me that I had never told Jesus my son's name or where exactly he was at the time. And yet, somehow, Jesus knew. I suppose it isn't any mystery. Does God not know where his children are at all times? It's also no mystery why all of my servants firmly believed in Jesus after that, just as I did. So, that's my story. And if you are to take anything from it, let it be this. Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah, and he is worthy of your faith. And mine.